You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. In his first days in office, President Donald Trump made good on a big campaign promise to crack down on immigration. He signed a number of executive orders to close the border, shut down asylum protections, and potentially expel undocumented residents. Actions that can have a big impact here in California, which is home to the most immigrants in the country, including the largest share of undocumented residents. And California is in the top two states for refugee resettlement. And earlier this month, ahead of Trump's inauguration, raids by the U.S. Border Patrol in the Central Valley raised fears about what immigration enforcement could look like under the new Trump presidency. In a bit, we'll talk about how these actions and executive orders are affecting communities and organizations in the Sacramento region. But first, we welcome Joshua Yeager, a reporter for the public media station KVPR in Kern County, to talk about the impact of the sweeps in the Central Valley. Good afternoon, Joshua. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Vicky.
So the Central Valley is a major agricultural hub in the state. How has this immigration enforcement been affecting the farming economy in the region?
Well, it's had huge consequences, both in the short term and potentially long term. Agriculture in California is a $50 billion a year industry, the largest in the country by far. And 50% of that workforce, a full half of that workforce, is undocumented, according to our best estimates. Of course, it's hard to get super precise numbers there, because a lot of these workers are vulnerable and don't want to necessarily volunteer their immigration status. And so when this Border Patrol operation happened 3 weeks ago today, the day after Congress certified the election, President Trump's election, it created a lot of fear and panic. We heard reports that up to 75% of workers did not show up for their jobs in the fields. This was happening at the height of the mandarin harvest, which is a really big time of the season here in Kern County. And so it had a lot of impacts in the sense that fruit was just sitting on trees. A lot of farmers in the region said that they did have enough like fruit and cold storage that they were basically able to weather that that storm. This operation lasted just a few days. So after it concluded, most farm workers returned to work and they were able to essentially, move on with the harvest as scheduled. But it caused a lot of disruption, and there's a lot of fear that these operations could become a new blueprint under Trump 2.0, which would be very disruptive.
You touched upon the timing of when this happened. It happened after the certification of the election, but it was still technically the Biden administration because it was the weeks leading up to the inauguration. When you talked to people in the community, even Border Patrol, did you get a better idea if this was actually connected to a change in administration?
That's what most advocates believe. I mean, it is hard to get a concrete answer one way or the other because Border Patrol, frankly, has not been communicative with media requests. But most advocates that I've talked to believe that this Border Patrol office in El Centro was essentially emboldened by Trump's certification and him coming into office in the following weeks. The way this operation played out locally, advocates' phones began blowing up on January 7. A lot of this was communicated on social media, with farm workers essentially sharing videos of Border Patrol vehicles driving through rural roads and communities. For its part, Border Patrol agents said that this operation was quote unquote targeted, meaning that they were really going after people who had prior criminal records and outstanding warrants. But a lot of advocates and farm workers that we talked to and interviewed said that, in their opinion, that seemed to not be the case. Agents were really targeting very public places, gas stations popular with farm workers, Home Depot parking lots where a lot of day laborers look for work, et cetera. So while maybe a handful of immigrants who were arrested in this operation did have criminal histories unrelated to them just crossing the border, a lot of folks who were swept up in this operation, their only crime was not having papers, essentially. And a lot of people who are caught in the crossfire of this I think it's important to note are just hardworking, everyday people who are just, you know, in many cases have been here for decades, who are really instrumental in the agricultural economy and just in their communities in general here in the San Joaquin Valley.
Do you have any idea on their status now? It's been a couple weeks since that happened.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's been very hard to communicate with Border Patrol. Just earlier this week, I believe, the Department of Justice issued new guidelines basically saying that advocates cannot enter immigration detention centers. So that greatly diminishes detained immigrants' access to legal information and services because they're unable to get that from, you know, from a third party. And so, you know, we saw a lot of things happening with this operation. There was a U.S. citizen who had his who operates a landscaping business, and Border Patrol agents slashed his tires, according to a video that was shared on a local news station, and detained his passenger, who, according to the driver, had an ongoing immigration case. So we're seeing instances where it's not clear how these detentions are resolving, and whether those who have been caught up in this operation are really getting the rights and information that they may be entitled to.
You mentioned that many immigrants work as farm laborers, and it was also the peak of mandarin season for these orchards. What have their employers, farmers, said about these sweeps?
Yeah, I mean, it's been reactions have kind of been across the board, but I think it's interesting because a lot of farmers here, I think it's fair to say, support Donald Trump and voted for him. And at the same time, I think maybe they believe that support would spare them from some of this immigration enforcement. At least that's what we've heard from some farmer groups that we've talked to. But what we're seeing based on this initial operation is that's not the case. And a lot of farm advocates are concerned that if this serves as the kind of blueprint or how Trump plans to fulfill his campaign promises of mass deportation, that it could be economically ruinous for the agricultural industry here in the Valley. Like I said earlier, with oranges, you do have a little bit of a buffer. This caused disruptions, but it was disruptions that most farmers were able to sort of absorb and not cause too many problems. But if this had happened in summer at the height of the table grape harvest, for example, if fruit is being left on the vines there, it rots. It's no good. And that would be really bad news for growers. It's created this situation where there is perhaps some strange bedfellows in the sense that you have both farmers and farm worker groups who ordinarily there's a lot of tension between those two lobbies or advocates. But at least on this issue, there is some unity in the sense that disruption is the common enemy, and both farmers and farm workers really want to minimize immigration enforcement of people who are just here trying to make a living, doing everything right, following laws, et cetera.
Joshua, thank you for joining us and sharing your reporting.
Thank you so much, Vicky.
Joshua Yeager is a reporter for the public media station KVPR in Kern County. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about how President Trump's immigration policy is impacting Sacramento and the Central Valley. Now I want to bring in two Sacramento area nonprofits who assist immigrants, asylum seekers, and refugees. Jesse Mabry is the CEO of Opening Doors, and Autumn Gonzalez is a volunteer attorney with NorCal Resist. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Jesse, I want to start with you. Tell us about Opening Doors. It's been in our community now for over 30 years.
That's right. Opening Doors has been around in one way or another for about 30 years. We got started as a volunteer outreach organization of a local church that was walking alongside, at that time, refugees from the former Soviet Union. We've grown and expanded over the years, and today we serve about 3,500 immigrants, refugees, and survivors of human trafficking a year.
Given that we're just a week into a new administration, but this also is a second Trump presidency, what conversations have you been having in the initial days of this new administration?
You know, it's a very fast-moving environment. We've been preparing for this for some time, where there was a lot of clarity about the policy platform of the incoming administration, so we were able to start planning, you know, months and months ago. And we just find ourselves learning new information on a daily basis and reacting to that as best we can to ensure that we continue to be here for our communities.
Have you already experienced impacts in light of these executive orders?
Yes, we have. I think across the board, we see an increasing amount of anxiety amongst the community members. People are worried. They're not sure if they'll be able to access their health care, if they should send their kids to school, what the sort of impacts on their life will be. There's a lot of anxiety amongst the folks that we serve, as well as the members of our staff. Mm-hmm. Additionally, we have also seen refugee arrivals be canceled. We had 83 individuals we expected to be able to welcome as refugees from January 20th through about the end of February, and all of their flights have been canceled.
I think it's important to also explain the distinction between the different pathways for immigration. There are asylum seekers, there are refugees, which has its own legal pathway. For those individuals who had their flights canceled, that's a pretty long road to get to that point.
It is. And thanks for bringing up the different pathways that folks can come here on. I think it's really important to start at the beginning, which is whether you're an asylum seeker or a refugee, you are fleeing a well-founded fear of persecution. There are different pathways to safety, but both of those groups are seeking safety. If you are overseas, the only way to be able to do that is through the refugee resettlement process, where all of the screening and vetting and all of that happens overseas before arrival. For asylum, the only way to claim asylum is at the U.S. border. So we saw, for example, that 30,000 appointments scheduled on the app called CBP One, which was a mobile phone application the previous administration had put in place to try to schedule appointments for folks who made it to the border and needed to actually approach the port of entry to claim asylum. 30,000 appointments were canceled just last week with one of those initial executive orders.
Autumn, I want to turn to you. Tell us about NorCal Resist. How did you begin?
Yeah, we actually got started in Trump 1.0 when Trump was first elected, and we realized that a lot of vulnerable groups, including immigrants and the LGBT community, were going to be facing new attacks, and that we needed to get organized and prepared and be ready to push back on those attacks and have our own narrative and our own ways of protecting ourselves. So that's when we got started. And one of the things that came out of that NorCal Resist when it first started was a coalition project of creating a rapid response hotline that people could call if they see ICE in the community, and it would send out verifiers, connect with our FUEL legal network, and do all the things that need to happen if we see ICE in the community.
Why did you get involved as a volunteer attorney?
Well, you know, my grandparents came to this country as farm workers. I grew up in a rural community in Oroville, and Yuba City. So I've always been around those communities, and I understand that people come here to work and to contribute and to make a better life for their families. So it's just very personally important to me, like the privileges I enjoy today are thanks to the work of my family.
As you mentioned, and Jesse as well, there has been preparation leading up to the inauguration because President Trump campaigned very big on overhauling immigration. That was a promise the first go around, and he's making good on it this time as well. In the first week since the inauguration, Autumn, given that you're boots on the ground, what conversations have been taking place? What have you been hearing that you would like people to better understand?
Well, a lot of what we're hearing is what Jesse was just talking about. A lot of fear, confusion about what's going to happen. Is it safe to access medical care? Is it safe to take my kids to school? So we're really making a big effort to get out into the schools and into communities and do Know Your Rights training so that folks understand that you can ask for a warrant, that these are the rights that you have, that people just can't come and trample over you just because you don't have a legal status. So we want folks to feel a little more confident in themselves by having that knowledge and that information. We think it's empowering. And to also know that we have a hotline here that people can call if something does happen, and that there are all these supportive services, whether it's community organizations helping the family to deal with the impact of immigration enforcement activity, or legal services, or these other services, that they're not alone and that we can help one another to get through this.
There were several executive orders or executive actions that were implemented in the initial days or even initial hours of this inauguration. Did any of them come as a surprise to either of you?
I would say the one that I personally found surprising was the classification of the cartels as terrorist organizations. That just was not on my radar. And that's going to have a huge impact on our folks who are applying for asylum, who are fleeing cartel violence. That's really going to change things for them in a not a good way. So,
yeah, how so, if you can help walk us through that?
Well, I mean, there's just certain, when you're involved in some way with what's called a terrorist organization, for example, like if I lived in Afghanistan and the Taliban put a gun to my head and said, you need to, you know, do this thing for us or we're going to kill you right now. Even though to a layperson, that sounds like, well, of course that person helped the Taliban. They were going to get shot if not. But because the Taliban is a terrorist organization, they might be barred from being able to win their asylum due to, quote unquote, collaboration or cooperation with a terrorist organization. So it really changes the legal landscape for that person in a negative way.
Yeah. How about you, Jesse? Did anything come as a surprise to you?
I think the thing that was most surprising was not necessarily the executive orders, but was the stop work order that was issued by the Department of State on foreign assistance. You know, I think the U.S. spends about 1% of our federal budget on foreign assistance, humanitarian assistance, school lunch feeding programs, anti-malarial programs, water programs, things like that. And the Refugee Resettlement Program is part of humanitarian assistance. So that means that refugee resettlement agencies all received a stop work order from the State Department on Friday, along with other implementers of, you know, humanitarian programs. And right now there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of not just the future of the program, but our ability to support people who are already here. When a refugee comes to the U.S. through the refugee resettlement process, that process extends overseas through to their new community. So the stop work order stops all of the overseas processing, but there is also a lot of uncertainty at this time in terms of what that means for people who have arrived in the United States and are within the 90-day service window that we have to support them on their path to integration in their new communities. For example, you know, that stop work order was issued late Friday afternoon. Thursday night, we picked up a family of special immigrant visa holders from the airport. These are folks who assisted the U.S. mission in Afghanistan. And we are, at this moment, continuing to provide support to them. But I think there is a lot of uncertainty about what will happen for those people.
Given that your nonprofit has been around for over 30 years, this spans different administrations across party lines. Has that ever happened before?
We have in our country's history seen, you know, changes in immigration policy, refugee resettlement, asylum welcome. You know, more recently, we think about after 9/11, there were significant decreases in refugee admissions for a couple of years. But even if we take a longer view and we look at the Chinese Exclusion Act in the 1800s, we've, as a country, you know, the story of folks coming here, as Autumn said, to build a better life for themselves and their families is a uniquely American story. And despite that, there have been moments in time where there have been increasing levels of anti-immigrant sentiment. And I think that we find ourselves in one of those places today.
As both of you know, Sacramento is home to many refugee populations, Afghans, as you mentioned, to Ukrainians, people from Central and South America. Does this impact of these executive orders, is it different depending on the community?
I would say so. I mean, I think we're hopeful at least that our Afghan folks will not be as targeted at in this moment. It really does seem to most negatively impact our Venezuelans and other Latin American folks who are using the humanitarian parole programs or here on a some other asylum-seeking parole process and don't have the better protections, the stronger protections that the folks who are here in a refugee status have.
When it comes to resources and support, Jesse, going back to the individuals who are ready to board a plane, who were on this long pathway to coming to the United States legally, and that flight was canceled, is there anything that can be done? Is there any legal recourse to make that flight happen?
At this point, no. I think it remains to be seen what will happen. You know, but I think it is important to understand the impacts of these changes on Sacramentans, right? You mentioned the vibrant, you know, different communities that we have here, whether they're Honduran or Afghan or Ukrainian. Sacramento is incredibly diverse. So many of us are, you know, take it as a point of pride, the diversity of our community. And oftentimes when we see the public discourse around immigration or asylum, we think about new arrivals. It's really important to understand that many of the people who have already been or will be impacted by these executive orders are existing members of our community. 60% of Sacramento County's undocumented population has lived here for 10 years or more. Because of a vibrant Afghan community, nearly every newly arriving refugee, Afghan refugee to Sacramento, has a family member already here. So those 83 people who were not able to reach safety, it's heartbreaking for them and what will happen to them over the coming years, but it's also heartbreaking for their family members who were here decorating the apartment for a reunification party and preparing the meals that they would share with their loved ones and who are just absolutely mourning this loss right now.
As we wind this conversation down, the reality is President Trump is our president. He received the popular vote, and this was a big campaign promise, which means that voters who did vote for him, not all, but some or maybe many, do agree with these executive orders in some respect. What would you like them to understand, given that both of you are deeply embedded in this type of work? We have about a minute or so left in the show.
I would just want people to understand that this idea that there's some criminal element of immigrants who Trump is going to correctly go after is just incorrect. I mean, immigrants are just people like the rest of us. You know, some people do commit a crime and some people, you know, do not. But overall, like, immigrants commit less crime overall than the general population. People are not coming here to make trouble. They're coming here to find that better life, to seek safety for their families. And I think just the entire narrative that has been built up by the Trump administration about who immigrants are and what they're coming here for is just, it's racist. It's just inaccurate. So I think that learning more about your immigrant community and your neighbors and understanding people and their stories as people would go a long way towards better understanding.
Autumn and Jesse, that's all the time we have. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Jesse Mabry is a CEO of Opening Doors, and Autumn Gonzalez is a volunteer attorney with NorCal Resist, two Sacramento area nonprofits who assist immigrants, asylum seekers, and refugees. And we've been discussing how President Trump's immigration policy is impacting Northern California and the Central Valley. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.